I always enjoy when our next guest is on our program. He has a new book out in paperback called Creative Schools. Serkan Robertson offers a roadmap to parents, educators, and administrators on how to transform the way our schools work, highlighting schools around the world that have already begun this process and giving practical examples of what works. Serkan Robertson is a leader in the development of creativity, innovation, and human potential. For 12 years, he was a professor of education at the University of Warwick in the UK and is now a professor emeritus. And we welcome Serkan Robertson to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. A great pleasure to have you on.
My pleasure, Joe. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. We did speak to you when this book was out in hardcover. It is now out in paperback, as I mentioned. What brought you to the subject, and ultimately, I mean, I know this came out of a TED Talk, a very popular TED Talk. What brought you to the subject and saying, okay, this is what we can do in our schools that is something that is being done that really works?
Well, you know, excuse me, Joe, you're right. The TED Talk, which is 2006, is proved to be very popular. It's been seen by millions of people in about 150 countries. The interesting thing about it was, of course, I've been at this rather a long time, and the TED Talk was just a moment along the way. I've been working in education, well, ever since I left college, you know, in my early 20s. And in the end, it's an 18-minute talk, and you can't cover everything. And, you know, some people have said to me, we love what you say there, but what do we do about it? And I have published a lot of things in that area before, but I thought it was time to bring it all together and up to date and show that having a more creative approach to the way we do school, which honors the skills of teachers, which recognizes the very different talents of kids, is not a theory that's untested. It works. There are lots of practical examples and lessons to be learned from them. And so that's the point of the book, to set out how this looks in practice and why we should be moving in this direction.
You talk about in the subtitle even of this being a grassroots revolution. Where has this grassroots revolution give us its origins and basically what it is trying to do?
Well, in the U.S., and I remember we talked about this last time I was on the program. I was just telling your listeners that you can tell right away that I'm not from Brooklyn. Yeah, but you know, I know that
we got
but,
that.
But
yes.
I do live in America. You know, I'm not calling you from the suburbs of London at the moment. I live in Los Angeles, and we've lived here for 15 years. So, and I travel a lot across the country, worked a lot with school districts. Our kids were in school here, so you know, it's a matter of personal interest to me as well as a professional one. And the things I'm talking about have been around for a long time. I'm always keen to say that I'm not peddling an untested theory or hypothesis. What I'm arguing for is a more holistic approach to education, a more personalized one. And in the end, any parent listening to this will know all their kids are different. They have very special interests. They have their own talents and abilities, their own possibilities. If we know anything about human life, it's that we are very diverse. We don't all have the same interests, and we shouldn't all be judged by the same standard. And so it's a holistic approach which recognizes the need for a balance between arts and humanities, physical education as well. And this isn't a new idea. It's been around for a long time. It's been around since the beginning of education. But in recent years, especially if I can say so in America, education has become more and more standardized and homogenized. And it's not because teachers want it or principals want it. There's been a big political pressure to get more and more testing into schools. And you know, lots of people are reacting against it these days, and they're right to, because education has become a bit of a drudge for so many people. The curriculum has become narrower. Arts programs, for example, have been cut. Humanities programs have been cut. Kids are stressed out very often trying to get through these tests. And it's all, for me, in the interest of a false ideal. It's not working. It's not really raised standards in the way that was expected in schools. And if anything, it's drained a lot of the vitality out of education itself. So it's been around. The issues have been around for a long time. There have always been wonderful schools in this country, many of them succeeding in spite of this culture of testing. And I'm really encouraging people to see that you get much better results, higher levels of achievement, higher levels of engagement, greater satisfaction for parents when we take a different approach to education, which is based on the principles of being more personal and more creative.
That idea of creativity also tends to be a more liberal arts, a more artistic approach, does it not? Or does it not have to be that?
Well, not not exclusively by any means. Yeah, I ran a big commission, a national commission in the UK before I came to the States. This is back in the late 90s, on how to make schools, help schools become more creative. Yes, I had artists on the group. I had writers on the group, but we also had, it was only a small group, 15 people, and we developed a national strategy at the request of the government, but we had economists, scientists, engineers. It's creativity is... it's what really has driven human culture and achievement down the ages. It's what makes us unique as a species on the planet. And America, above all, has been a country that's thrived on encouraging innovation, entrepreneurship, and creativity in all sorts of different fields. It's not confined to the arts. I'm very preoccupied in many ways with getting the arts the status they deserve in schools, but not at the expense of science. I know a lot of scientists who are deeply creative. Science is a tremendously creative discipline. So is engineering. So is technology. Look at what's happening in Silicon Valley and how that's transformed the lives that we lead. But, you know, if you look at great companies, for example, like Apple, obviously you could think of that as a brilliant technology company, and it is, but it's also one of the world's leading design companies. It's one of the world's leading lifestyle companies. It's why it's been so successful. The things they make aren't only functional, they're beautiful, and the two things are connected. And, you know, seeing the importance of design, of visual arts, of the creative work that goes on in disciplines, as well as the arts, is a vital part of understanding how this works in schools. It's not one thing or the other. It's how they all connect and feed off each other.
Was there ever a golden age, in your opinion, where we had a focus more on the students and teachers and not test scores?
I'm always a bit... I thought you mean. I'm always a bit wary of golden ages, aren't you? golden ages always turn out to be 50 years ago.
Well, meaning, do we have something? Have we strayed far? Have we strayed far away from something that there was a good point where we were doing it right that we have to get back to, or do we never have it quite right and we have to evolve even more to get it right?
Well, I'm saying there are golden ages happening all the time. You know, it's interesting. You know, when I was a kid, my parents, who I loved to bits, you know, but you know, my dad was always talking about the good old days, in exactly the same terms now as I tend to think about the 1960s, which he thought was the worst time in human history, you know, because you know, we were
right.
All going around listening to Led Zeppelin and growing our hair long, and the world was coming to an end as far as he could see. So I don't think human life moves forward in quite that linear way. As you know, it's, you know, there's always good and bad going on, but in education, I mean, there are wonderful schools right now. I mean, I could take you to them, and we talk about a lot of them in the book. I do think, though, that there has been a shift in the last 15 years in America, at the national level, because of this preoccupation with testing that came about through No Child Left Behind. And that, in its turn, was the result of a report that was published when Ronald Reagan was president, called A Nation at Risk, which preceded it in the 80s, which was talking about the falling standards in America. You know, whether standards are going up or down is always a matter of some contention. It depends what you're looking at and what criteria you're using. But there was a concern that standards were falling. But interestingly, there was a concern in Finland about the same time, too, in the 80s that was happening. And they have now become one of the world's leading education systems on almost every front. High levels of student engagement, high levels of parent satisfaction, high levels of teacher satisfaction. Teaching is a strongly respected profession in Finland. And they've done the whole thing in the same time period. They've got to the top of these league tables that people seem to be so concerned about without focusing on them. There is no standardized testing in Finland. There's no payment by results in Finland. There's no competition between schools in Finland. It's almost the exact opposite model, the one that America's adopted. And it's one that generates and thrives on creativity and collaboration, not competition and standardization.
When, as we mentioned, this book came out a year ago, how has it been received? And do you think that the message is being heard and progress is being made?
I think so. You know, I mean, I've been around education for a long time. I get, it's one of the great pleasures and privileges of the work I do. I get invited to speak a lot to audiences across the country. I was in Texas recently talking to the Texas Association of School Administrators. I spoke to the National School Boards Association. I was in in Northern California recently, speaking to one of the universities. I get around a lot. I speak to lots of different groups, and people know and understand this. It's why I think, you know, that TED Talk you mentioned right at the front, Ross, it's been seen now by over 38 million people. It's why that talk, I think, has proved to be so popular, because people agree that there's something going wrong here and that education has become too homogenized, too standardized. It's not working. And it's why I wanted to write this particular book, because it doesn't have to be this way, and there are very practical ways of doing things differently, and many, many schools are actually doing it. But they're doing it in the kind of, as I say, in a sort of headwind of standardization. And I think the more schools realize that there's room for innovation and improvisation within the system, the more they realize that's the real way to raise standards, that the more they realize they can do that, I think the better education will become.
The name of the book is Creative Schools, the Grassroots Revolution That's Transforming Education. The book is published by Penguin and out in paperback, as we mentioned. Sir Ken Robinson, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you, Joe. A great pleasure as always. Thank you.
Thank you very much.